Can I ask you something? What's your family story worth to you? And I'm not talking about the shiny ones that everybody knows about. I mean the buried ones, the secrets, the heartbreaks, the ones that only slipped out after a night of too much Hennessy. That's what Vietnam Story Bank is for. No polish, no rewrites, no editing, just raw, recorded, beautiful beating history. The kind that makes you sit up and hold your breath. Your father's memories of his mother's wildest dreams, your grandparents' laughter that echoes in your bones. We dig it all up, we record it, and hand it back to you. Safe, untouchable, and unforgettable. Because when your stories disappear, they're gone forever. So go to VietnamStoryBank.com today and make sure your family's stories are recorded. Today I have Diana Nguyen. I was recommended by a good friend many years ago when I started to invite you on. And I am so thrilled to have you on today. So welcome to the Vietnamese podcast.
Thanks for having me. I feel my cultural legitimacy is real now.
You're legit now. You have street cred.
Yes.
So how did your family end up in Australia?
Both my parents came by boat separately and met in Springvale, which is a small town in Melbourne, and met at the Enterprise Hostel. So it was where the Vietnamese refugees were trained before they went out into civilization. So, you know, learning how to drive or learning how to use a microwave. They both met in 1983. So, yeah, it tells you how old I am.
We won't dare do the math.
No, we don't.
and so growing up, I understand your mom really wanted you to become a doctor. At what point did you go, that's not really going to happen?
So the funny thing is that, all our parents have these expectations coming by boat. And I absolutely understand it because my mother was an educated woman in Vietnam during the war. And so after the war, that freedom was taken away because schools, weren't allowed. Her freedom was taken away. And so for her education, the top job was the doctor. However, in that aspiration for me to be a doctor, when I was three years old, my mother gifted me a piano. When I was 7 years old, I went to ballet classes. And so the arts seeped into me. And it became the medicine, the money making became irrelevant because the art became who I was now. And so, I didn't become a doctor. But in saying that, Kenneth, I don't know you know this, but I am a clown doctor and I work at the Royal Children's Hospital here in Melbourne. And so I have told my mum that I am a doctor, but more just a funny doctor.
Wait, there is a such thing as a clown doctor, or you just made that up?
No, I didn't make it up. So, you know, Patch Adams, Robin Williams. Mm-hmm. So that's a real career and job. So I've been doing this for 8 years, and my shift at work is wearing a red nose and walking in the wards, working in oncology, burns unit, working with kids who's just withdrawing their bloods just to distract them and to give them to get the doctors to work faster, that I get the child to, like, look at me and make fart sounds and give them a distraction or joy or sing songs to them. And so I've learned in my career that essentially if I just give people joy, then I'm fulfilling my whole artistry. And so that's been the biggest gift for me to be working as a clown doctor.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is the first time I've heard of that. I mean, I think that I would be a really good clown doctor.
Yeah, just put that red nose on, baby. That could be good.
Yeah, but I wonder if it's just an Australian thing.
No, it's in New York. New York was the first school that had clown doctors. Yeah, it's all around the world. They have clown doctor conferences. I'm not sure about in LA if there's clown doctors. It's a very specialized work. It's not just any performer, in LA, but actors everywhere. But it's a highly trained kind of sensitive listening because you can't come in planning. You have to go with what the child is offering you. And so you've got to have improvisation skills. empathy, because this kid could be screaming for an hour and all you have to do is keep honking your horn, keep like clucking like a chicken, mm-hmm. and, you know, listen to where they're going. And so it's quite a skilled job to have.
And how much training did you have to go through to become this?
Well, I was made redundant from my job in 2016 and I had my redundancy pay. And then someone messaged me and said, hey, there's clown school. And I was like, I don't have a job. Why don't I go to clown school for 4 months? And, you know, being an Asian, there's not many parents who want their kids to be clown doctors. And so I'm the only Vietnamese Australian clown doctor in Melbourne, which is only 13 clowns. But in the whole of Australia, there are altogether 70 clowns. And there are only 3 or 4 Asian clown doctors in Australia. So,
Wait. Can you give me that stat again? How many?
So there's 70 clown doctors in Australia.
Only 70?
Yeah. It's a very specialized job, as not for everyone. Yeah. And the artistic director, so my audition was 3 hours long with another person. And all we had to do was improvise.
This is serious.
Oh, yeah. You know, when I finished audition, I went home and slept.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
I thought you were totally joking around earlier, like when we were talking in the beginning. I'm like, this is probably your part of your shtick, but I'm like, wow, this is serious business.
Yeah. We've segued a whole lot into my life now. But yeah, that's why I realized that I was trained to be a performer as a child, but now I know my true purpose, which is joy. And if I can give joy to one audience member in their hospital room, it fulfills everything that I was meant to be as an artist. Mm-hmm. Like I performed in Orange County with 4,000 Vietnamese people in the audience. And that was so exhilarating, the adrenaline. But for me, when I'm performing to one child in their room with their parent, I feel the same thing. And so it's reconverted the purpose of why I became an artist. Yeah.
Can you tell me any instances where you've seen a child light up because of what you did in that room?
Yes. You know, it's 8 years. I'm trying to think of a very clear moment. You'll edit this, yeah? My thinking brain?
No, we're not. I don't edit. You know, I let it rip.
All right, good. I love it.
Yeah, we don't mess around here.
That's a good. I'm authentic and real at all times.
Well, why don't you think about that?
Yeah.
As we're talking, and then I'm gonna. Do you have something?
Yeah. I've got one from last week when I was working. So, got one. So children have to go in and do dialysis, which is medical infusion, blood infusion. So they have to, you know, refresh their blood supply. And it's a bunch of children, and was working with about an 18-month toddler who was in their cot. And who knew bubbles makes children so happy? Like you blow a bubble, their whole soul lights up. You see it.
Hmm.
And across the room, a girl had a remote control and she was playing with another clown doctor, because you always play with two clown doctors. This girl was pressing the button, and the clown doctor was being a channel. And so every time she clicked it, it was a new news channel, like, you know. And then she clicked it to me and this toddler who were together. And then when she clicked it, I pretended that this child and I were in a soapy called The Young and the Restless, because this kid was 18 months and I was the restless. And then I started to act a scene with this 18-month child that we're having a fight. And this toddler cannot say a word because they're just like sitting in their chair. But everyone watching were laughing because they saw as an episode of The Young and the Restless and this kid just eating their cracker, and everyone was laughing in the room. That's one instance. Another instance is when we do burns. So a kid has had a burn in their arm. The doctor needs to take off the old bandages and put on the new bandages. And our job is to get in, make that kid laugh. And so we had a laser light where the kid shone on the walls. And so and naturally boys love it when you fall over. Like, they love slapstick. They love they love silly things. So for half an hour, I slammed my body against the wall, pretending to find this laser. Wow. And he laughed the whole time while his burns were being changed and put on. So it's simply finding the game that makes them laugh and then playing it constantly. Yeah. And sometimes a game could go on forever. And sometimes you work with a patient for an hour and a half and you don't leave the room. Yeah.
I think about people's jobs a lot because of I'm sitting in this chair asking about people's professions. And this is one profession I am blown away. And I'm like, I want to do this.
Yeah, join us.
But the space, why do they only have 70 spaces for the entire 20 million people in Australia?
Because of funding, number one. The turnover of employment, some people have been clown doctors for 25 years. It's a beautiful job. Like, when it you is. Find this Sounds job, like it. Yeah. Like, I get to act with an audience and give humanity back in a space that's quite dark. And so no one wants to leave this job. So the turnover in work, everyone just kind of stays there. And essentially, I think when you become too big, and, you know, we do have 25 million people, when you become too big, the work quality disappears, and essentially the work of the clown doctor is the quality of work. And so the less numbers, the better. And we do have conferences once a year, so 70 clown doctors converge to one city, and it's hilarious because you can hear them coming.
But you, after a while, you get to know everybody, right? Because
yeah.
You know, there's only 70 of you in a room. I mean, how difficult is that?
We do get to know each other quite intimately, and the job is so intimate as well. And because you work with another clown doctor for 5 hours straight, it is very, very intimate work, and you get to know how your partner moves, flows, falls, and yeah. I'm very grateful, and I can see you're like, whoa, what is this?
Well, yeah, because I have to prep for these interviews, right? These podcast sessions, and I'm like, all right, well, I have 25 questions for you, but that none of it, I don't think anywhere online that I'd even in your Instagram, there's no sense of you doing this work. I had no idea.
No,
I mean, I could spend an hour talking about this, but I think we have to get into your work as a comedian in Australia, and. All the differences between, the big thing is I wanted to know the difference between American comedians and Australian comedians, but we'll get to that hopefully in a bit. How did you actually get your start in comedy?
Since I was a child. So I remember, that's because I came from a domestic violent home. And I went to a school because mum was in a women's refuge. We had to go to a school where I was the only Vietnamese girl out of 200 students. And I remember using comedy to get my way through school. And I realized that comedy was a superpower very early in my life. It was my way to manage people. And then, you know, and then I went back to my normal school, which was 90% Asian. So I went from being the only Vietnamese to now 90% Vietnamese kids in Springvale. And I just realized that I could make people laugh very easily because of what happened at that school when I got bullied and had racism. So I just knew how to, I'd say marinate, not manipulate. I know how to marinate people. And then, you know, as I said, I did ballet classes in high school. I ended up being top class of drama. So I'm a trained actor. I went to university and trained for 3 years. And how I got into comedy was I realized that my rhythm, I could hear cues very easily and know what to do next to make someone laugh. And so that's where Fee and Me came in. So if I could pinpoint the start of my comedy career was watching Felicity Ward perform at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival in 2010. And I'm sitting in the back row going, oh, man, Vietnamese people are funny. We've got stories to tell.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to go tell our stories next year in the Comedy Festival. And then that's what happened. I went home to my co-creator, Fee and Me, Fiona Chow, and I said, Fee, we've got to write our stories about our mums. And both our mums are single Vietnamese refugees who live in Springvale. And we wrote the show. We performed it, sold out for 3 weeks in Melbourne, the Comedy Festival. We had people lining up, like Vietnamese people lining up to pay back in 2011. You know, that was rare for us because, you know, I make the joke that we pirate DVDs, watch Paris by Night or Asia. You know, we don't line up for things. But here we got our community to get in their car to go watch themselves being funny. And that's how I started, Fee and Me, in 2011. I've got branding there. It's on my phone.
So tell me a little bit about the premise of Fee and Me.
Fee and Me is about a Vietnamese Australian teenage girl living in Springvale who has a tough and loving mother. And the intergenerational conflict growing up in Springvale. So it's essentially based in the town that I'm from, Springvale. And it's the trials and joils of these two people interacting with each other. Fee and Me was released out into the world in 2011 as a comedy theatre play. We performed for 3 years and it's gone to Edinburgh as well. We've gone to Scotland. It's performed in Orange County. At the Jetha in Garden Grove. That was really beautiful for me because I realized comedy can be translated across continents. And I could take a Vietnamese Australian story to America because everyone gets what it is to have those expectations from a parent and, you know, the love of a Vietnamese mother. And that's essentially why Fee and Me is so important to me because I wanted to make sure our first generation parents were visible because I find like in media, we don't show up. Our parents don't show up. It's the second generation who show up. And so for me, that's my legacy piece is that it shows the love of a Vietnamese mother for their children.
First generation can't show up because they're busy surviving and making money for us.
Yeah. And so, you know, in Fee and Me, the mum is a sewing woman in a garage and they rarely put out their phones and start filming social media. You know, they're not showing and like, hey, I'm sewing right now. Like the way we do things now, we are constantly becoming our own social media and reality show. But back in the day, our parents were just working so that they can elevate their children. And that was their own main aim, was to make sure their children could never ever feel and work as hard as they ever did. However, they didn't know the trauma they were giving us was the expectations. That's what we have to carry. Yes.
Very true. When was your first time you got on stage and what kind of propelled that?
So stand up. I've had a very multifaceted life. So stand up came into my life 8 years ago. I'd done acting. I got 20-second roles on TV. And I'm like, I've studied for 3 years as an actor. Why am I getting 20-second roles written by white people who could only write one Asian character? So the work was limited. And then Fee and Me kind of took over the world and my life. And then I realized what would it be to just be Diana Nguyen as a stand-up comedian? And what would it be just to stand up for an hour without being taken off stage for 20, no, after 20 seconds, like have full ownership of who I was. So my stand-up career was me writing a one-hour show and get up on and then getting up on stage without doing bits of it. You know how you do spots in LA, you know, what's that big one in Boulevard?
Comedy Store.
Yeah, Comedy Store. Like you perform your best 5 minutes and you figure it out. My first ever show, I did 1 hour.
You know what they say about 1 hour shows from a comedian? It takes a year to like work and refine it and, you know, get the bits all worked out to get it to hit.
Yeah. No, I did it in one go and I failed miserably.
tell me about your snort's really, really cute, by the way. Every time I've counted like 8 of them now. It's some funny stuff. How did you actually think that you can go on stage and do an hour and get away with that? Did you study? Did you know that there's an actual formula for comedians to like build it up to an hour of, you know, bangers, you know?
Yeah. So I had a director who reviewed it and was like, yeah, that's good. But as a comedian, you know, you don't know until you go on stage, right? The audience give you the beats. They tell you when it's heartbeating, that laugh's hitting. So I just thought this training since I had as a primary school fee in me that I was prepped. So I went on stage, did it, and by the hour mark I realized, no, this is actually an hour and a half show. I know. And the reason why I got through it, I really believe it, which is my Vietnamese blood. Like wow, you go all in.
That is excruciating, and over an hour, and you go all in. Did you get laughs? I mean,
I got pitted laughs, and sometimes pity laughs. And this was my first show ticketed; it wasn't free. God, don't worry, babe. I tell this to like top Australian comedians, and they have gone, I am frightened. How could you do that to yourself? And I go, because of my mom. She came here by boat. She kept going. It's in my gene. You just stand there and keep powering through until you're wrapped up. But the greatest thing was that I could hear. So even though it was a shit show, I could hear from the audience when they laughed or not. And so I had a week off to redraft the show, performed it a week later, for a whole week. So the first show was like, I didn't know it was a tester, but I realized it was a massive preview. But the week later, I cleaned it up, performed it, sold out, and got 4-star review out of 5.
So,
out of 5, 4 out of 5.
So the reason, what is the reason why would people buy tickets if you've never done this before?
Because I'm a trusted face in this Melbourne because of Fee and Me. Like, I already had a fan base who were like, she's a legend. She's funny. I don't know if anyone came back to that show. Like, after seeing that first dance, I don't know if they came back to buy more tickets. But I know. I'm here just having recollections of how crazy was I.
Yeah. You're a legend. That's like legendary shit. It is.
And 8 years later, I still have a career. It's my money earner now.
And I just want to put this into perspective for the audience. It's like, okay, in order for comedians in America, I don't know how you do it in Australia, but I'm thinking it's the same. You go around town and you go to all the comedy clubs and you work out these bits and they're like 5 minutes at a time and you really get it really dialed in based on human interaction with you. If they're laughing, then you just keep refining it until you go through about a year and then you have about an hour's worth. And then when you deliver the show at an hour, you're going to have a lot of bangers in the string of jokes that you put together.
Yeah.
And I think that is, you skipped that whole year and you just went out and did it.
Some comedians take 3 years, you know, but I did it I had a script. I did it, delivered it. Week later, I delivered again and it worked. So maybe my method was good. And, you know, sometimes with the comedians, and I find is that sometimes you just have to go, once you've done your spots for a year, just go all in and don't question yourself. Because then you end up doing spots for the rest of your life. Like I know comedians who never do 4-hour shows because they just have that fear. Because they just don't know. And I love a journey. I love a hero's journey. So I take my audience on a 4-hour ride and they trust me. So yeah, I love an hour show. That's my, yeah, I get off on it.
Wow. So you did Fee and Me first. And then, so you did that show first, coming out of acting at university, and okay, makes sense. And then you had the confidence to put a 1-hour show together.
I call it courage more than confidence. And we don't say our parents came by boat because they were confident; they had courage. So
right. You're absolutely right. And so when you did that after that 1-hour special, did you go back and, you know, after that sort of that week, did you go back and develop more material? And have you been doing stand-up all these years based on that experience?
Yeah. So, it's my full-time job as a comedian. I tour 5 cities in Australia. And then I do the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, which is the 3rd largest festival in the world. And it's in my hometown. Convenient. And you do 22 shows in 3.5 weeks. So you're just pumping every night except Monday. Stand up, stand up, stand up. And it's starting here in Melbourne very soon. So I'm so grateful that, you know, I have the largest comedy festival here in Australia in my hometown. I performed in Edinburgh. So that's another story. I performed in Edinburgh at 12:30 a.m. Oh, there's my alarm. I performed at 12:30 a.m. My show was called Naked, the first ever show I did, and I realized that there was one night I had, when I walked out into the audience, there were 6 men in the audience at 12:30 a.m. in Edinburgh, and I realized, oh, God, they thought I was going to be naked. I just read the title.
And he showed up.
Who goes to see a comedy show at 12:30 and 6 minutes?
How did it go?
It is one of my top 10 audience shows I've ever done in my life because it reaffirmed myself as comedian that I could make anyone laugh. And because my brain did go, holy crap, this is my first orgy that I've ever done in my life. This could be bad. But I realized just trust the process. You've done this show over 100 times. Do it. And, yeah, all these men stayed. They didn't leave.
I ask every comedian that comes on this podcast, what makes something funny to you?
Oh, what makes me fun? What makes it? That is a big question for me. Just silliness. Yeah. I think that's why the clown is so important to me. When I see someone do something abnormal with their bodies, I laugh. And also hearing someone laugh, I start laughing. I'm a ripple. So you know how you've heard me snort. I had a show where I snorted and a young woman in front of my audience started snorting. And I joke you not, for 5 minutes we snorted together.
Why?
I snorted, she snorted. The whole audience were laughing at us just laughing with the same sound. Yeah. So it doesn't take a lot for me.
How did you develop the snort?
I don't know when, but I know why I do it. It's because I don't take a breath in when I laugh. So it's stuck in my nose. Yeah, so then it comes out. People do, and I've got a podcast called The Snortcast as well. So I've branded it really well. I used to have back in high school a Fran Drescher laugh. So the ha 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 laugh that I don't have anymore. It's so unattractive.
Well, you used to have the Fran Drescher laugh.
Yeah. It's evolved, but the snorting has stayed. And I do, it is a superpower I have when I hear people react to me. And I think it's the reaction that I love from people when we can react. And I can change. I do a lot of work with corporates as well. So I love it when I jar their professionalism. Yeah, I really love it.
Do you get that Australian comedy and American comedy are, you know, it's basically English, but it might as well be another culture, right? It's just very different. I have Australian friends in America and very close to me, and it's like they will say things all the time, and me and the guys that are American, we look at each other and we're like, that was like Greek to us, or literally so. But tell me about how different it is for you when you're watching like Netflix and you're seeing Chappelle, you're seeing, you know, all of the greats. Do you look at it and go, this doesn't make sense to me? Or is it like a sort of unrequited love? Like, you love them, but we can't love you guys because we don't understand you guys, but you understand all of the comedy that comes from us. I often wonder about that.
Well, interesting. No, I feel like with comedy, there's a commonality. And, I, you know, there's context. If it's about American history and there's particular things that I don't know, that, of course, I wouldn't find it funny. No, I find for me, and maybe it's because of my work as a comedian, it translates for me. Yeah. So I don't have a loss in translation because of the two continents. Like, even I even love British comedy. Like, I love Ricky Gervais, there's Jimmy Carr, there's Catherine.
But you guys are closer in sort of culture, you know, Australians and the Brits, because, you know, just the proximity of the culture and the history that you guys share, it's much more, you guys have closer relationships than you know, Americans with and Australia. I'm surmising.
Yeah. No, yeah. I enjoy all kinds of comedy. I think it translates, and that's why I think I love Edinburgh so much, because the whole world comes with their art to Edinburgh. And yeah, you just realize we're not making a lot of money, but we love what we do. And so the comedy translation, I pretty understand.
Yeah. Who are some of your heroes? Who's some of your icons?
Top three. I had someone ask me this last night at an event. I was emceeing an event here in Melbourne. And this man was like, who's the top three? I wanted to see what infiltrates. And my top three is Ali Wong. I think for a woman to talk about anal on Netflix, love it. She kind of, for me, broke that, you know, was able to go there and break that fringe for me. Number two is Dave Chappelle. I love his brain and how he is able to say it, but it's smart. Yeah, yeah, there's a reason why he says it. And, you know, the sketches of him, you know, the Ku Klux Klan back in the day, it's one of my favorite clips I've ever seen someone do comedy. And my third is Robin Williams. Like, to have a man walk into a room, yeah, without making a joke. Like, he doesn't need to go into a room and make a joke. You feel the energy in comedy, and I really align that with myself. Like, I've been told that when I go into a room, people feel it. Yeah, so, I gravitate to that physical comedy as well.
Yeah, with Chappelle, it's crazy because it seems so effortless. It seems like he doesn't have to do anything. And I strive to live my life in whatever like profession, whether it's podcasting or whatever I do, I want to make it look that easy. But the reason I'm bringing that up is because in order to make it look that easy, how many thousands of hours do you have to do to make it seem that, you know, easy?
Yeah, it also saying that he's also a genius.
So yeah, you think so?
Yeah, he was born to do this. Like, I've watched clips of him just sitting on a bar stool and just think.
Yeah.
And people wait. He doesn't need to be funny. people will wait for him to say the next line. And that is a beautiful gift to have. And I'm getting goosebumps saying it because that is artistry and not everyone has it. And that's why he is who he is. Yeah, we can't replicate that. And so we have to find our own bar stool and just maybe wait. And then maybe I'll just do a little fart. And that's my comedy. But yeah, we just have to find our own voices in that and our own energy. But yeah, Dave, you can't. Ugh.
So you just brought up two things, two spectrums. Yeah. Chappelle has it.
Yes.
But I brought up it took time, yeah. Right? But do you ever think, no matter how hard you go and work at this, that you're just getting better because of time, but you'll never, does it ever, self-doubt, does it ever creep into you and go, you know what, that guy can like get this level and I'm here and I'm always going to get, you know, thicker layers on top of my comedy and get deeper, but I can ever, will I ever hit the Chappelle? And it's not even about the money or the crowd size, right? It's just about what you know that you can accomplish. And it, you know, the best way I can kind of reimagine this is, okay, as somebody who jumps like to make a slam dunk at a basketball court, you know, your jump at max is like 15 inches. You have an 8-inch jump right now. But your muscles will never allow you to be a 15-inch jumper, right? Like, I'm curious about people like in your profession. Do you strive to get to that level?
Look, there is massive imposter syndrome in every industry, and it's definitely in the comedy industry. I'll be really frank. I've probably had it for the last year or so, where I'm not sure if comedy is my zone.
Wow.
And I'm saying this honestly, Kenneth, because as I said when we first started, I learned how to make people laugh as a child. And that's a skill that I learned. But what is it to be just a normal human being without making someone laugh? And so it's the untraining that. Because I know how to make conversation really well and manage people. But what if I didn't have that skill? What would Diana be?
So, are you trying to figure that out right now?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Why now? What triggered this exploration?
Because I think I didn't enjoy the aftermath of doing an hour show. Like, I would come off and my adrenaline would be so shot that for 4 hours I couldn't sleep. And this is for the longevity of our artistry. Like, people don't understand the adrenaline that comes into audience retention to keep them together, to make them laugh. It's such a drug. And so, you know, you have to question, like, if you're not sleeping well, we hear about comedians who have alcoholic and drug issues. And luckily for me, I just have a glass of wine and I'm good. Thank God I'm Vietnamese because I get the red flush. Thank God that saved me. But it's not an easy industry to be part of. People think, you just get on stage, talk for an hour. Absolutely not. You don't understand the preparation it takes, the adrenaline to come down and you go home to your apartment and no one is there clapping, you know? It's a full experience to be a comedian, and people don't see the aftermath of that hour show. And so I am questioning, is it possible to have that? But because I've taken a break, I've realized that good self-care, but also I have access to something that is so magnificent. And because I've taken this time off, I realize that I love what I do. And so I think it's really important sometimes to take a foot out.
Yeah.
Really evaluate what you want in your life and your superpower and how to use it efficiently. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think like Chappelle.
Where I am right now.
Yeah. Yeah, just like Chappelle, he took some time off, and I think some time off is mandatory for people who are creative in the creative space, because you kind of need to regroup so you can come up with more material, more energy, more process, you know.
Yeah, you don't want to be a burnt out, overweight comedian just saying the same jokes from 10 years ago. And
yeah,
I do not want to do that.
So you are going to go back to it.
Yeah, no, this whole time I really felt nutrients come back into me, and it feels more me than me running on a treadmill or someone else's machine. And yeah, and exactly that, like that Dave took his time. He went away to Africa, I think, didn't he? He said, yep. I'm going to do my work in my own terms, not because someone's paid me $20 or $30 million to tell me to make art. Art is me. Yeah. So, yeah, look, I can call myself a Dave number two if you want me to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you are able to get to a level, and then this is very American-centric from this question, I realize is very, very American-centric. And I'm ashamed to ask it, but whatever, here we go. Do you ever feel like when you look at the American comedy landscape that is an aspiration for you? Or are you okay with saying, I can be the top of my game in Australia and I'll be content?
Look, the Australian comedy industry is very small. Very small, and it has been aspiration for me to get to America, because when you do your work really well in America, it's a land of opportunity, you will excel. If you do the work, you do it really well, your door opens up. And so that is an aspiration for me, but there's also a green card that we need to talk about too. So yeah, there's all these hindrances to getting to America.
But the green card issue, isn't it like if you have a special skill and you kill it in Australia, you could apply to get a visa in the US and come here and do comedy? It's
very hard.
Really?
Yeah. I have a friend, He Huang, who's like got 150,000 followers on Instagram, and you know, had to get all these references, and and there hasn't been any progress at all. So it's not as easy as it seems. Yeah. And maybe because of change of, you know, America's going through a change of government as well. So, yeah, it's really depending on, how the office works fast. But the great thing about social media is that it's allowed these voices to penetrate more than ever before.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are uploading their 2-minute crowd interactions, blowing up. My friend, He Huang, she's Chinese, Australian. She was on Australia's Got Talent, and her YouTube video got 600 million views. Yeah, and it blew her up. So
that's all it takes, right?
Yeah, right. And so I guess it's now the world's changing. You can be in Australia and still nail the American
market.
But I have found with comedy, you need your feet in that land. Yeah. You need to be doing those spots, getting that word of mouth out, and then poof, you're in. Yeah.
You know, there's all kinds of forms of comedy, and it's growing. I think it's like sometimes we just think that it's just a microphone and your thoughts, but there's this guy in social media. Have you ever heard of Morgan J?
Yes.
He does the music and he does the auto-tunes.
Yes. He's like, and they have to go, it's beautiful. It's become sexy. Yeah.
It is so amazing. And I'm like, that to me is sort of like the future of like how dynamic when you add technology, you add this sort of authenticity. The crowd working that he does is... I'm really such a huge fan of Morgan J, and I really, you know, think about how things are in the ether for us and we just don't see it sometimes, right? Like, who would have known like a guy like Morgan J can figure out, you know, having a musician play the jazzy little sort of like snippets, and then he throws in the auto tunes, goes into the audience, gives these really authentic encounters, and it's just so beautiful. He's always asking people, are they going to make love tonight? You know, these couples. And I find it to be so beautiful. You know, I love his Morgan Jay. You know, it's here's what I think. Love is about unity. You know, it's unifying. It's anytime you get things that try to break things up or create, you know, North and South, you know, Australian and US, and rivalry is not love. And when you like in families, when you love each other, you want to unify. And I think guys like Morgan Jay, and even the work that you do as a clown doctor, is about unification. It's about bringing us together, our hearts together, you know. And that's, you know, just wanted to rant.
You know, and an analysis of Morgan Jay is that he talks about love.
Yeah.
But in his audience participation, he gets an audience member who's never had their voice heard before and gets them to sink into the music and unifies that. And so that's the artistry. Yeah, when you allow your audience to feel safe, and sometimes they stuff up, because I follow on Instagram too. Sometimes they don't get the memo, and that's where the comedy comes into, when they don't understand the memo of that love transaction that he's trying to do.
When they don't get it, he just clowns on them. It's so, I mean, it's good either way. If they get it, it's fun. If they don't get it, it's such like good comedy.
It is. And it's beautiful. And so, yeah, he might have like tested it out at its spot, and it worked. And then he just doubled down. And I think he came here to Australia recently as well. So,
yeah, he's on tour right now.
That's it. So, when social media did that for him. Like, he wouldn't have come to Australia if social media had blasted him off into the world.
Right. And that's the thing about all of our journeys in the Vietnamese creative industry. It's like, we're just waiting. If we don't stop doing what we do, and we just all keep doing it, at some point the ignition happens, and yeah, it just lights up the forest, and we're just, you know, now we're like on the map. And, you know, that's why I love having these conversations, because I want to hear, you know, your journey and what are you developing that's beyond, you know, like a Morgan Jay, you know, it's like, you know, auto tunes and this jazzy sort of like snippets in the back and crowd work. It's just so innovative. Do you think in the future of your career, are you looking for some breakthrough, or are you just going to power through with, you know, just more stand up?
Look, I've been doing this for 20 years.
Wow.
The greatest thing about me is my toolkit. So I've written plays that have been commissioned for over $1 million. I've got my podcast. I MC. I'm flying to Vietnam in 3 weeks to keynote at a corporate event. And so my work, the comedy work and everything that I do in my life, it comes together not because of just my stand-up, because of Dine and Win, and I've cultivated this human to be hireable. So I feel very lucky that I've created a brand, and we are buying brands now. I feel like the whole personal branding is so important now. I could see myself doing this for another 40 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's when you know you're in the right pocket, right?
Absolutely. And I'm glad that at 20 years old, I found it really early. Yeah. I found
that is fortunate.
Is very fortunate and so blessed. And my mother is on board now. Like, it took her some time to.
It took her 21 years. She's been at it for 20.
Yeah, yeah. she once said on a SBS Vietnamese radio show, she said, "I understand why my daughter does what she does, because she keeps our stories alive. And I don't understand the industry isn't a money-making industry unless you make that top 5%. But she said, I always have a room for her in my house if anything fails. So, yeah, I have an amazing supportive network around me to allow me to do the work I need to do. And that's very important.
You know, for all of these young aspiring creatives in our world, comedy, podcasts, acting, musicians, you know, it's, I say this and it's always about like, you have to do this for a few years and comedy or podcasting might not pay the bills, but the byproduct of the work pays the bills. It's the weirdest thing. And you have to really believe that after a few years, the money will start trickling in and then it becomes a waterfall after a while and you just get hired for like the weirdest gigs.
That pays so much money. Yes. Yeah. You
preach.
It's, you just have to.
Preach. We want to hear it.
Yeah. You just got to stick it. Stick with it. Stay in the lane. Keep. Yeah. But also, you know, we're seeing different platforms. Like OnlyFans is now doing comedy. Like they're bringing comedy comedians to create profiles on OnlyFans. And so
pretty the world brilliant.
It's changing. I get it. Like it started with one, like, you know, very niche industry, but now it's going, hey, but we've got fans everywhere. So why don't we tap all the fans of every industry on OnlyFans? And, you know, you got Patreon and all that stuff. So, yeah, just how do I say it? This is a 20-year journey. It will get tough. But if you love what you do, keep going.
Yeah, you almost can't really think about the money because that will make you cave. Yeah, that's the biggest advice.
You will do the 9-to-5. You will go to 9-to-5 and then you'll spend years doing that and you realize, oh, I could have done that. I could have done what I really dreamed for another 5 years, but I kind of gave into the money. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you've been to Vietnam before? I'm sure.
Yes, I was there for a sabbatical last year for 7 weeks.
And what did you do during that 7 weeks?
In Hoi An, I started writing my memoir because I've lived a life. And I just felt like it was time. So I've done 5 comedy specials, like 5 one-hour shows, and I felt like I needed them documented. And also being a Vietnamese Australian, I felt like there weren't many voices of women talking about the experiences, and you with Fee and me, that took my soul. And I really wanted people to understand how much labor it took to create this web series. And I wanted to show art process. Like people only see the final product. Like most of your listeners, hi guys, will listen to the hour and they're like, wow, great job, easy. But they don't understand, you know, we had some emails, you've had to turn on the light, you've got to consistently do the marketing. And I just want to talk about process. Yeah. How long, what is the 20-year process to be an artist? How long does it take to create a one-hour show? I just did it. So this memoir is about process for me.
Well, I can't wait to read it because I love reading memoirs about
people in our community. I got to finish it first. That's the process now.
Now, can you tell me about your podcast?
Yes. The podcast ended 2 years ago, but it's called The Snortcast, hence my snorty. And it interviews comedians about their process and how they write their jokes and be funny. So I started this concept on LinkedIn because I have a fan base on LinkedIn.
Wow.
And it was during COVID when I started the podcast. And in Melbourne, we had lockdowns at 9 p.m. We had red curfews. So my podcast live streaming started at 9 p.m. when everyone was locked in their houses. And the comedians couldn't go anywhere, so I know I could just grab them. I didn't have no excuse. And so there's 40 interviews during COVID lockdown that I did.
Oh, wow. And you didn't keep going with it?
No, because I felt like that was an era. But I am in the next 12 months going to launch my new podcast. It's on the horizon, but I haven't nailed down the idea yet.
Yeah. Well, when you do figure the next podcast out, and when you get your memoir out, let me know.
Thank
and
you.
We will get back on and have another conversation about those two things.
Oh, yeah, yeah. How to do a podcast. Yes, you would know. You would know.
Thank you so much, Diana. And I appreciate you coming on from Australia.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.